I'm going to start today with a beautiful poem. We're going to go on to talk about the whole notion of dividing lines. So I'll start with this wonderful poem. Now, this poem was written by Secho, who was one of the compilers of the Hekigan Roku. And it was a verse in the commentary of a koan, which we might go into at some point during the talk, perhaps not. But let me go straight to the poem. And this is how it goes. Hearing, seeing, understanding, knowing. Each of these is not separate. For him, mountains and rivers do not appear in the mirror. When the frosty heaven's moon has set and midnight nears, whose shadow with mine will the clear pool reflect cold? So this poem is about what happens when dividing lines drop away. What happens? Now I like to always hearken to the teachings of modern physics. Modern physics. And if you were to look at the macro view of modern physics, which is described by, to some degree, the theory of relativity, that was by Albert Einstein, I'll just greatly simplify it for the purposes of our talk today. Einstein had a profound understanding of something. He actually said he had a religious experience and it took him 20 years to put it into mathematics. That's the way he described it. But if we were to talk about one essential point in the theory of relativity, it's that if you wanted to describe the position of any object in the universe, you'd have to describe it with four coordinates, not three. The normal three coordinates of space and the fourth coordinate of time. And what the theory of relativity expresses and what Einstein realized is that time and space cannot be separated. He referred to it as a space-time continuum. You might call it a fabric of space-time. Or you could just call it space-time. You might put a dash between those two words, but in the modern age of internet monikers, it would be space, no space, time. Space-time. Now, after Einstein, another theory came about, and he was a part of the elaboration of this theory, but it's called quantum physics. I've talked about this many times. One core realization of quantum physics, something that from the ordinary viewpoint of a subject-object duality is most puzzling, most mysterious, is that anything, meaning any set of particularities, any form, does not come into being, does not manifest, does not become, as we might say with quotes around it, real. It isn't real. You might say it isn't until what? Until an observation occurs. This is mind-blowing. the world and observation are inseparable. No observation, no world. So space and time, not separable, no dividing line. Particularities and what you might call knowing, no dividing lines. So let's go back to the first part of this poem. Hearing, seeing, understanding, knowing, each of these is not separate. This poem was written perhaps right after the Tang Dynasty. It's pretty amazing, the parallels. Now let's do a thought experiment. This is very popular in physics and science to do thought experiments. And then eventually an actual experiment occurs, not just in thought, in order to confirm the result of the thought experiment. So we'll do a thought experiment in our actual experiment, real world experiment, that will confirm the thought experiment is our zazen. This is the laboratory. So it's well accepted that if you were to move time in a backwards direction, which incidentally in quantum physics is quite possible and actually happens somehow, time moves in both directions, there's no restriction to the movement of time. If you were to just go back to the very beginning, you would reach what is described and widely accepted. Perhaps the astronomer here left out, because I'm not sure what she thinks about this. We all began with a singularity. What is a singularity? In other words, everything we see here, its source, its starting point, was one thing, one. It had zero dimensions, or you might say the space between anything within it was zero. And therefore, there was nothing outside it. Therefore, it was neither large nor small. It was unitary. Now, everything we see here now, and let's just get simple, let's call it space and time. At the point of the singularity, space and time were one. Things and knowing were one. You might say mind and body was one. Now, what could this one be if not you? You can't be excluded from it. Then you would have come about somehow outside of this source. It's impossible. Everything started there. Now, as this singularity expanded, gradually forming the universe as we see it today, at what point did it forget that it was one? At what point did it begin to believe in dividing lines? This is actually a question for each one of us. So what do we do about this? Dividing lines are very useful. Therefore, the human mind, which is brilliant, a powerful tool, sometimes a weapon, is very adept at making dividing lines, which come about from naming, comparing, then additional things like preferring, preferences, we've talked about that before. Emotions. All of these things are elaborated by the mind to take this spread out singularity and split it up into manageable pieces that we can then manipulate in order to achieve certain goals. And all of that is quite useful, but somewhere along the line we get fooled into thinking that the names, the dividing lines that we make in our mind are somehow out there, not created by our own mind, but out there, outside, and real and true and actual. And the end result of that is beautiful creations, artwork, literature, wars, killings, tribalism, all this stuff, all of it. The despair of feeling cut off from everything else, being a single point of awareness surrounded by a foreign, outside existing, separated world. That's what comes about from this dividing line. Now it's maintained by thinking. Sometimes unconscious, most often automatic. It immediately layers on the world. So in our Zazen, we have to somehow begin to work with this in order to get to the place that this poem initially talks about, which is seeing, hearing, understanding, knowing. Each of these is not separate. Pointing back at this source, which spread out but never separated. So what we need to do is, first of all, look into thought, the divider, look into it, into its nature. What is it? When we look into its meaning, we are doing the dividing. When we look into its nature, we are experiencing it. Thought too came from the singularity, this one thing. This is why Secho said, seeing, hearing, understanding, knowing, each of these is not separate. So there's absolutely no problem with thought. There's no reason to do battle with thought. I would put it the other way around. Invite thought. It's just another piece of this one whole thing. You remember the blind wise men who encountered an elephant? I think there were four of them. Each one was at a different part of this elephant when they encountered it, and one felt the tail and says, "Oh, I know what it is. It's a snake." Another one felt a leg and said, "No, it's a big trunk of a tree." Another one felt the side of the body and says, "No, it's a giant boulder." And then the fourth one felt the trunk and said, "Oh, no, it's a branch of a tree hanging down." Now, for each of these wise men, their limited perspective made it into something very specific. But if they were able to suddenly see, they would realize that they were feeling different aspects of one thing. So this is why, if you encounter a tail or a leg or a trunk or the side, it's not to be rejected. It's part of one thing. Let me read you something. Hopefully I'll find it. So this is from a talk given by a wonderful Zen master. I've read this before. I've mentioned this Zen master before. He's contemporary. He was a Chinese Zen master and he died, I believe, in the 1960s. This book that I'm reading it from was first published in 1959, and the writer of this book was actually his student. So this was a fairly recent talk that he transcribed, and in this talk, Suyun, who at this time was 119 years old, said the following. And this is in a chapter or a section that he called Difficulty for Beginners, the Remiss Mind. Some are serious in their religious duties, but do not know where to begin their training. Others are afraid of false thinking and are unable to put an end to it. So they worry about it all day long and blame their karmic obstructions for it, thus falling away in their religious enthusiasm. Some want to resist false thinking to the death by angrily clenching their fists to keep their spirits up and by thrusting out their chests and widely opening their eyes as if there is really something very important to do. They want to fight to a finish against their false thinking. Not only will they fail to drive it away, I like this line, but they will thereby vomit blood or become insane. So, pointing at this importance not to do battle with what is called false thinking. Now, you might say the false side of false thinking is its meaning, is what your mind adds to the thinking. That's created within your mind. It's not created in the outside world, so to speak. But the thinking itself is just thinking. When we begin to drop the meaning off and observe the thinking itself, literally the sensation of thinking, and invite thinking in to see the sensation, because you want to feel this really clearly. You have to feel the thinking, not just understand or think the thinking, feel the thinking. How do you do that? Just like the ear is the organ of sensory experience for sound, the eye is the organ for sensory experience of sight, the brain is the organ for sensory experience of thinking. You already have a sense organ, it's called your brain. So when you're thinking, you immediately, if you're attentive and don't get lost in the meaning in a dreamlike state where one thought follows another and you're going into a slippery slope, you immediately know you're thinking. When a thought arises, you see the thought, you see that you're thinking. Some teachers advocate simply saying the word thinking. When you see thinking as sensation, you should immediately do the very next thing. See that this sensation is not separated from other sensations. There's no dividing line between it and the smell of incense, or the appearance of sun dappling on the floor, or the feeling of your legs folded up, or the coolness of the air in the room. Remember the wise men feeling the elephant. If you don't confine yourself to the trickery of the senses, you'll get it right away that all of these things are part of one bigger thing. This is that continuum of space-time. Now, because the eye only sees certain wavelengths from just above infrared to just below ultraviolet, and the ear hears things maybe from 20 cycles per second up to 15,000, depending on how old you are, we're experiencing this one thing with various senses that don't have overlapping wavelength sensory capacity. So the eye thinks that sight is separated from what the ear thinks is separated from what the nose thinks is separated from what the brain thinks is separated. So you've got sights, sounds, smells, thoughts. They seem to be separated, but remember, it's one big continuum. It's just our senses are separated in that way. That's the way it evolved. That gave us the best chance of surviving, to pass our genes on. So don't be fooled by the fact that they seem separate. Now in our Zazen, it's not hard to do that. I mentioned last night about this experience of synesthesia that certain drug-related experiences can create, where the feeling that these things are separated completely drops away. You feel like you can smell sounds and you can hear sights. You can taste moods, whatever it might be. It blends together. So the very first step is to experience your thinking as sensation. And then the very next, it should be immediate. Immediately, you're experiencing a thought and you're hearing a sound and you're smelling incense. All of this is one unitary experience. One unitary experience. And when we do this quite well, when we, in a sense, zoom out so that we're not a blind man feeling one piece of this whole thing, there's a name for that. It's called shikantaza. And when it's done really to perfection, you might call it positive samadhi. No dividing lines. Seeing, hearing, understanding, knowing. Each of these is not separate. Now there's the next line to this poem, and this is very important. For him, mountains and rivers do not appear in the mirror. This is a next step. This is a big turnaround, big deepening. What do I mean by this? One student went to the master after a very flashing experience. It was a Kensho-like experience. He says, why do you reject this? What is it that I'm not seeing? He said, you still need a hammer stroke on the back of your head. That's the way the master put it. There's still something watching, something standing apart. Okay, cool, I get it. Thoughts, smells, taste, touch, sight. All of these things are not separate. And yet, there seems to be an entity with characteristics, with a history, with particularities, standing apart, observing this, standing on a stone bridge, watching water flowing underneath, stuck on the bridge, the water's flowing, but it's not flowing. It's standing on the side of the river or above the river, looking down. What do we do? How do we get through this barrier? So I'll read this line again. For him, mountains and rivers do not appear in the mirror. There isn't even a dividing line between mountains and rivers and what one thought was a mirror. An observer. And remember what Einstein said. That space and time are not separable. Quantum physics. Any real thing cannot be separated from observation or knowing. They're not separate. How do we get right to this? I'm not saying through some complicated formula in the mind or some long process. How do you immediately step into this? When you put to bed the meaning of your thoughts, see them as sensations, merge them with all the other sensations, totally get that they're part of this one big space-time continuum, then you immediately notice something else. It helps if you're not entangled with it, if you also understand that this space-time continuum, at the moment of observation, which is this present moment, has collapsed all other possible configurations into just this one configuration, moment after moment after moment, as I say sometimes, done. Therefore, no need to entangle, because entanglement is both futile and irrelevant if it's done. Now I can notice something about it, that it is. Remember, space and time can't be separated. the particularities of your sensory experience, this one fabric of sensation, can't be separated from time. And time is time. The very nature of time is. Dogen said this, being time. He said time is being and being is time. Being is knowing. This is that space-time continuum, but we can get it immediately by noticing that things simply are. That is incontestable. You will immediately get it. It doesn't take any mental acrobatics to understand that things simply are. Now, how does this barrier between the knowing entity standing apart, this thing created by a very deep aspect of the dividing line maker, the human mind, how does this blur and get wiped away? You have to look so intently into this being, this is, this amness. What is it? What is it? This is where koan practice can be very helpful. Or what I think is a variety of koan practice, what I call penetrating shikantaza. You enter into, you wonder about this is side of reality. Inseparable, but you can see it directly, that it is. What is that? What is that? As you start to wonder about it, you say, wow, how strange, things are. Things are. Paul Tillich, famous Catholic philosopher, wrote in a book, said, the most profound question I could ever ask myself is, why is there something rather than nothing at all? This is the beginning of what might be called the doubt sensation. This deep questioning, this wonderment. And this starts to pull you in a new direction. Direction inward. Not outward, looking out from the standpoint of a tiny dot of consciousness at a foreign universe. Now you're beginning to turn around, turn about, as they say, looking into the fact of the world. You put to bed any dividing lines regarding the sensory experience of it or its meaning. You put to bed any entanglement because you realize that in each thought moment it's done, done, done. Entanglement is irrelevant. Entanglement is futile. In my intense zazen here in this session, where I'm not doing anything else, I'm sitting here. Now I can begin to peer into this is. What is it? You see if I can help describe this action, this movement, by reading from the masters. So let me go back to Su Yun. This is something else he said. And this was a section that is entitled Taking Care of a Hua To. That's a Chinese word spelled H-U-A, second word T apostrophe O-U. In Japanese, it's Wado, W-A-D-O. So taking care of a Hua To and turning inward the hearing to hear the self nature. And so Su Yun said this, someone may ask, how can Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva's method of turning inward the hearing to hear the self-nature, that's actually one of the meanings of the name of this Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, one who hears the suffering of others, or one who hears the self-nature. So someone may ask, how can Avalokiteshvara Kanon, Bodhisattva's method of turning inward the hearing to hear the self-nature be regarded as Chan training, Zen training. Chan is the Chinese word for Zen. I've just talked about looking into the Wado, Wato. It means that you should unremittingly and one-pointedly turn the light inward on that which is not born and does not die, which is the Watto. To turn inward one's hearing to hear the self-nature means also that you should unremittingly and one-pointedly turn inwards your faculty of hearing to hear the self-nature. To turn inwards is to turn back. That which is not born and does not die is nothing but the self-nature. When hearing and looking follow sound and form in the worldly stream, hearing does not go beyond sound and looking does not go beyond form or appearance, with the obvious differentiation, exactly what we were talking about. When we look in the opposite direction, we become the blind man, feeling this, feeling that, seeing it as separated, differentiating between this and that and the other thing, and then our preferences, and then our affinities, our tribal associations, etc., etc., and we're off and running. However, when going against the mundane stream, so this action is called the mundane stream, this is the everyday action of the human being, which we all know very, very well. This is the human condition. When going against the mundane stream, the meditation is turned inwards to contemplate the self-nature. When hearing and looking are no longer in pursuit of sound and appearance, okay, so hearing and looking, if they were in pursuit of sound and appearance, they would be entanglement. One would be wanting a particular sound or naming that sound or comparing that sound, etc., etc. But remember, at the moment of observation, that sound is done. Can't be taken back, can't be changed. Each thought moment, because we can slow it down here in our zazen during sesshin, is done, done, done. We've begun to reverse the mundane stream. Now we can bring up its fact. Its particularities now are not important. They're there, we use them, but we use them to see its fact. And that is what Suyun calls, when hearing, looking no longer in pursuit of sound or appearance, they become fundamentally pure and enlightening and do not differ from each other. Pure and enlightening. The do not differ from each other is this synesthesia, when we no longer arbitrarily divide the world up into hearing, seeing, thinking, smelling, tasting. How are they enlightening? How are they enlightening? So he goes on, he said, we should know that what we call looking into the Watto and turning inward the hearing to hear the self-nature cannot be affected by means of the eye to look or the ear to hear. If the eye and ear are so used, there will be pursuit after sound and form, and with the result one will be turned by things, externals, turned around. This is called surrender to the mundane stream. If there is singleness of thought, abiding in that which is not born and does not die, without pursuing sound and form, this is going against the stream. This is called looking into the Watto, or turning inward to hear the self-nature. Now, how is this enlightening? Remember the famous statement by Dogen. Dogen said, to use the self to experience the coming of the manifold dharmas with a small d, meaning smells, tastes, sounds, all the little units of experience, of sensation, to use the self to experience these is ignorance. That's the mundane stream, looking out and being turned by externals. He said, to use the coming of the manifold dharmas to experience the self is enlightenment. So these mountains and rivers do not appear in the mirror. They don't appear in the mirror. And then he goes on to say, when the frosty heaven's moon has set and midnight nears. What is he describing here? When we turn this mundane stream around and look into the source of seeing, the source of hearing, the source of smelling, in other words, we look into its fact and see that its fact is inseparable from my knowing. And my knowing is inseparable from the deepest center that can't even be defined, that has no particularities. Then I understand that what's embedded in reality, which is its presence, is a knowing, can't be separated. And as I enter and get curious and wonder and penetrate back into this, I enter a state with no form, color, sound, smell, taste, touch, thoughts. He describes it here as follows. When the frosty heaven's moon has set and midnight nears, whose shadow with mine will the clear pool reflect? Cold. How puzzling. How puzzling. This is going into that darkness. And as we go in, the world is still there, but it's only in shadows. The presence of this intimate darkness begins to take over the mind and body. Sounds are there, they don't go away, but they're like shadows. Cold doesn't go away, but it's like shadows. And still they're not separated. Whose shadow with mine? Will the clear pool reflect cold? This is that wonderful poem. So, I think we have gone into this in some depth. Once again, just as an overview of what this poem is pointing at, is sensing your thoughts, seeing that the sensation of thinking is not separate from hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, knowing, understanding. It's one thing. And this one thing has beingness as its embedded nature. It can't be separated from its fact. That fact can't be separated from my knowing. My knowing can't be separated from some nameless center. It was the center of the universe during the singularity. It forgot, that's all. So we go back into this place. When the frosty heaven's moon is set and midnight nears. So we'll end there today.